We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Studs, let's go.
There have been three rebuilds. I wouldn't even consider the first one a rebuild when we first got the job because we didn't have anything to do with that. All we did, well, I came in and we turned it around.
There's been three rebuilds. Okay. My name is Lawrence Holmes. This is my show. I'm here with you until 10 o'clock. We've been talking a little bit about the John Paxson interview on McNeil and Parkins. It is, the last 7 minutes of it are choice. The whole thing's good, but the last 7 minutes are, if you were doing a super cut, that would be the cut. That I'm not going to spend all night talking about this. I'm keeping a smile on my face for the most part. It is good to have NBA people around that know what they're talking about and people who are covering. So Maggie Hendricks is going to join me in a little bit. She was at the UC when the trade went down. We're going to talk with her about that. Chris Herring is just a fantastic NBA writer for 538 and ESPN. He's local. He covers this league as well as anybody that does it. He's also a professor. He's a good man and thorough. At Herring_NBA is where you can find him. What's up, sir? How are you?
Great, man. How are you? I appreciate all that.
I'm doing all right, man. Things are interesting here in Chicago with what John Paxson said on the Scores airwaves. Yeah. Well, what did you think of it, Chris? Well, what was your big takeaway?
I mean, it sounds like he is frustrated with other people being frustrated, which I guess I understand. It sounds like he's very particular about wanting to know names, numbers of people that, you know, that he feels like have said that they either don't want to be with the Bulls or specific criticisms that have been laid out. And I mean, you know, I get that he doesn't like the anonymous nature of a lot of this stuff, but I'll be really honest too. Perception drives a ton of this stuff in the NBA. And, you know, whether or not, and I can understand why it would bother him if the union wasn't called specifically about that practice and, you know, what he didn't want to deem as a mutiny or whatever, but players around the league talk. I mean, they talk in different tones than they would to their general manager, or to their coach. That's just the reality of it. I'm sure that perception exists. I'm sure a lot of that did not help the team. And whether you want to deny the specifics of that, which I understand, you know, you probably do want to correct the record, but don't get angry about the idea that someone's asking you to lay out how stuff wasn't true. I think that's actually a fair opportunity to just let someone speak, which is what radio shows give people like that the opportunity to do.
You talk with a lot of people around the league. What do people you talk to say about the Bulls?
I mean, what anybody says about the Bulls right now, that they're hard to watch and, you know, quite frankly, have more talent than some of the teams that they struggle with, or at least as much talent. Now, it is very young talent. I know that that's what John was saying. That's absolutely true. They've had injury issues. That's absolutely true. The coach thing, you know, I've never really seen why or understood why you would box yourself in as aggressively as the Bulls did with the idea of saying this is our guy going forward. Why not use it as a tryout the way you are with everybody else right now? You basically put Jabari on a one-year tryout and didn't even make it through the whole year. That's okay, but you just have to kind of acknowledge that and move forward. I'm not quite sure about why there's been such a rush to do that. I'm sure it makes Jim Boylan feel good. But everybody should kind of be on notice at this point because of how they've played. You've got a few guys that you know are going to be around for sure, like Zach LaVine, just because of the nature of his contract. But aside from that, and you know, maybe some of the youngsters, I'm not really sure why you would lock yourself into situations that, I mean, John acknowledged during the first few minutes of the call, it was bad those first few days and that first week. The noise around that team was bad, and that's how perceptions are created, whether you like them or not. And it sure as hell takes a long time to eliminate those perceptions. You have to do it by winning and by not looking crazy every week. For whatever reason, that there was not even a conversation about the injury stuff that's come up, where one day the Bulls will have somebody playing 40 minutes and then the next day realize that they had them play through an injury that made it even worse. So there's a lot of stuff that's perception, but there's a lot of stuff that, until you clarify it, whether it's doing an interview or other means, that it's going to look crazy.
You're uniquely qualified to answer this question because you grew up here. I have a hypothesis, and that hypothesis is, if you grew up here, you don't want to play here. And the reason why I say that is that, and the example that I always use is Curtis Granderson. Curtis Granderson could hit 235 anywhere. And when he comes home to Chicago and gives money to UIC or pops up in the lineup over on 35th, people love seeing Curtis Granderson. But if you're here and you don't play as well as people maybe remember you playing in high school or in college, that the ride that you're going to get is a rough one. And I felt like Jabari did a lot of this stuff on his own. He's not blameless in this. But I would recommend to anyone who grew up playing basketball here to not play basketball here professionally.
I mean, that's fair, and I think that's legitimate. I know Derrick Rose. I mean, there was a really lengthy GQ story done on Derrick Rose as a cover story from a few years ago, more than a few years ago, because this was going all the way back to like the knee injury time when he was still a Bull. Where, you know, the interviewer, I think it was Will Leach, interviewed him, and he, you know, was in his penthouse with him at Trump Tower. And basically, Derrick Rose was so giddy about the idea just to spend all day in his apartment and do nothing. And he was like, you know, it's so draining for him, someone that didn't necessarily choose to be in Chicago. Who knows, maybe he would have chosen that. But he talked about the pressure of everybody knowing who he was, because he'd played in front of this city his whole life, with the exception of college, but that was only for a year. And all of a sudden, all the teams and city's hopes are kind of riding on his shoulders. And then how quickly all that turned around, obviously. And, you know, not having an opportunity to get away from it until he was a Knick. And so, you know, I see that. I think really, if I had to guess, and maybe it's just the way that, you know, my mind kind of works as someone that grew up here, and maybe this is some of the pressure that John Paxson feels as well. This team has gone through such extremes, really. When you look at the Bulls' years with Jordan and the years that Paxson was there, where they were so great, and then Jordan retires, and, you know, in some ways it was kind of self-inflicted because the Bulls wanted to move on from that era for whatever reason, which I'll never quite understand. But then they were so horrible. And, you know, and John was talking about the rebuild and kind of how, you know, it took some time to do that. And then they got Derrick Rose, and then they were so good again. And, you know, and now we're looking at it, and it's just kind of like it's a major market. So why is there not the opportunity to do better than this? You know, and people have the same questions about the Knicks, which I covered them. It's pretty crazy that you can go that long and be that poor. But I really think it's just kind of the idea that there are times where, you know, the team has not spent the way they could have spent to stay more competitive or be more competitive. When they kind of tore stuff down around the team around Derrick Rose after he had that injury, and they had the best bench in the league, and then they let all those guys walk. So, I mean, there's just different things that happen that I think the fans get frustrated about it. And I think that they're within their right to do that. They're fans. They can do what they want. They can support what they want. But, you know, having to answer questions about it, it shouldn't put you in a worse mood necessarily. It just tells you the reality of the way people feel and what the perceptions are.
Initially, when I invited you on, I wanted to talk about all the happenings in the NBA, and I don't want to waste this opportunity with you to talk about some of this stuff. What did you make of Anthony Davis not being traded to the Lakers?
I'm not that surprised by it. I told some of my friends this. I was in the middle of work last week. I had a friend that I haven't seen in months who is a huge Laker fan, and he called me just middle of the day. I was like, "Everything all right?" And he's like, "Yeah, just, you know, what do you think the likelihood is that he's going to go to my Lakers?" And I was like, "Man, I don't really think the odds are that good." Just because, you know, there weren't that many incentives for them to get the deal done before the trade deadline. And I thought that, you know, they'd have more suitors in the summertime. And I don't think it's just the Celtics, although I think that they'll probably be there as well. But just rationally, whichever team gets the number one pick at that point, then it's not guesswork for the Pelicans to figure out exactly what the value of the pick that the team that they're trading with is going to have. And in particular, If it's the Knicks, you know, they don't have Porzingis anymore, and it sounds like the Knicks offered him straight up. But, you know, at that point, the Knicks would have not only the number one overall pick if they were to win the lottery. They'd have that. They'd have their last two lottery picks in Knox and Ntilikina. And they have two picks that they just got first-rounders from Dallas in that Porzingis trade as well. So there's a lot that they could offer. You know, you would figure that, you know, if Davis actually wanted to come here and that was a thing, that the Bulls, if they were to win the lottery, they would have stuff that they could offer. And that will be true of any team that wins the lottery. And so I think, you know, just realistically, why would you pull the trigger if you're not in love with the Lakers' prospects? Why would you do a deal? It doesn't matter how many players they offer if you're not really in love with any of those guys.
On 538, you were part of a Q&A about what was going on with the Knicks and them trading Porzingis. That's a franchise that you covered intimately. What does that say to you, and why did the relationship with Porzingis and the Knicks sour?
There's just a lot of weird stuff there involving Porzingis' brother, too. And I know that that's something that Chicago has been kind of familiar with, too, just with the stuff with Reggie Rose. But Porzingis' brother from very early on kind of wanted a role and everything, you know, basically took over midway through his time there as Porzingis' agent, and, you know, wanted things to be a certain way. It's just, it was kind of weird to me that he was frustrated with the direction of the team and, you know, the idea that the team is playing so poorly and when are we going to improve or how are we going to improve? And Porzingis wasn't there. I mean, he's been hurt. And so it was very clear they were going to be bad this year. It's in some ways to their benefit, just like the Bulls at this point, to be bad this year, just to try to get a better draft pick to pair with Porzingis next year. And so I don't have any issues with that. I mean, if we're going to, you know, get on the Knicks for not being competitive, you could have picked any one of the last 10, 15 years to do that, really. But what I would say in particular with that is that it's strange to me that Porzingis wasn't practicing with them or anything and wasn't really out there and wasn't part of the workouts and now is immediately out there with Dallas. I think that's a bad look on his part. I get it. I have questions about what the Knicks are doing too. I think it is a huge misstep on their part to part ways with Porzingis, given that they had the leverage if they don't end up with at least one max guy. And I would say at this point, if you're looking at one max guy, it has to be KD.
Yep.
If you don't get him this summer and you were trading Porzingis in part to just unload all the deals that you don't like, the contracts that you don't like right now with Tim Hardaway and Courtney Lee, it looks really bad that you traded away a franchise player just to clear space, because the Knicks have had a really bad history with signing free agents. Their last three or four that they've signed for $100 million were, at this point, Carmelo, Amari Stoudemire, Allen Houston. And that's not a great track record. Not that that matters going forward, but it's just kind of like it's a lot of eggs to put in one basket. And if you don't get them, you know, they obviously struck out on LeBron before. And, you know, just based on the history of the organization, I mean, there would be reasons to pass on them now, quite frankly.
I want to try and be responsible with this next topic, but I just, what's up with KD, man? Like, for real, like, what's his deal? Because I feel like if you're tired of people speculating about what it is that you're going to do, couldn't you easily just say, hey, I'm coming back here next year, or we'll discuss it when the season is over? I don't understand why I understand why it bothers him. I guess I just don't understand why the reaction from him is seemingly nuclear instead of trying to piece together a more rational response.
I'll be really honest. I mean, I wasn't even really noticing how long he'd gone without talking to the media until I started to see people write about it, and they're saying this is day 9, day 8 of, you know, of KD not speaking to the media, and all since, you know, Porzingis was traded. And, like, to me, why not just talk to the media that day? I mean, if you're uptight about it, then that's one thing, but I feel like it creates, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire. I kind of feel like it creates more of a conversation, which I totally agree. You could shut that down very easily by just saying, guys, I'm not going to talk about that. That has nothing to do with me here. In the Bay, the Knicks are doing whatever they want to do, which the more power to them, let them do it. I mean, they've been playing well in Golden State right now, and so it's really weird timing on a lot of that stuff. But what I will say, and this is what I said on Twitter last night, being just kind of a Twitter sleuth, which doesn't count for anything, it doesn't matter, this was exactly the same time 3 years ago that the rumble started to happen with KD with regards to if he does end up leaving, that his first choice would probably be Golden State. It was February 2nd of 2016 that the first report came out that year about Golden State being his preference. Woj was the first one to report it and actually put pen to paper with something like that. And so the idea that now that those rumbles are starting to get louder with New York, it's the same timing, you know, and if you want to get upset with the media for kind of creating smoke and then maybe some fire with it, I mean, they weren't wrong the first time. And, you know, and it does seem very clear that, you know, between the Draymond incident earlier in the season and the idea that when you have an outroar like that or uproar like that yesterday, it makes it look like you're not happy. Maybe it's because of the media, maybe it's because of other stuff. But not winning, if winning alone, you've won two championships now in the 2 years you've been there, won two finals MVPs in the 2 years you've been there. If that's not enough to make you happy and kind of fulfill you, maybe he wants another challenge. Maybe he wants a challenge that he feels like is going to be worth more in the eyes of hardcore fans that want to see him do it with a team that's not stacked the way that is. And if that's what he wants, the Knicks do make sense. And so, you know, people are going to kind of, you know, put things together that way. But, I mean, he can do what he wants. And I don't really know why he cares as much about the perception. I think we're all sensitive to certain things. I think he is, too. Maybe we're not quite used to seeing it on that level with someone of that star power who's that accomplished. But it was interesting to watch. It was interesting to watch because it was one of my friends who he was critiquing. But to be honest with you, that person that critiqued, he was one of the first people to say that he thought that Durant was going to end up in Golden State several years ago. So it's a little bit odd. He's pretty well respected.
Yeah, and the fact that it's a guy that's writing a book about Golden State, and plenty of people talk to him, even though KD says otherwise.
Was unemployed, and Kerr was going on his podcast. I mean, it's not like he's not respected. I don't know. I just, the idea that he's there and he's surveying and that he's talking to people, that's what reporters are supposed to do. But again, I just kind of feel like having an outburst like that just makes it look like there's even more to it, or that there's something, an undercurrent that's bothering Durant that may not have much to do with the media.
Would you like to be the first person to report that he's going to sign with the White Sox? Because every time I see him in a press conference, Kevin Durant's wearing a White Sox cap.
I wouldn't want that, just because I don't need someone here being upset with me in the media too. I think I have enough people like that around the league. So.
I know that is the truth. Chris, I appreciate the time. Thanks so much for joining me. I'm looking forward to another in-studio the next time that we can make it happen.
Sounds great, man. Thanks for having me on.
That's Chris Herring of 538. He's a great basketball writer. You should follow him on Twitter at Herring_NBA. So we got away from the Bulls for a little bit, but one of my teammates was like, you know, I was at the United Center. I was like, really? So Maggie Hendricks is going to join me, and we're going to talk about the Bull with her next here on The Score.
Otto's always been a really high-level shooter. He's been a complimentary piece to guys like John Wall and Bradley Beal, and he's played that role well. We just think, you know, the decision for us came down to, you know, we've been looking for wings, athletic wings, that because of the way the game's being played and versatility, where guys can slide from the three to the four and guard multiple positions.
That was John Paxson on The Score earlier today talking about the trade. Otto Porter is a Bull. He's going to cost a whole lot of money. We're talking about that and everything else that went on in that interview. We're not going to, like, the whole show is not going to be that, just here and there. But one of the teammates had a up close and personal encounter with Jabari Parker yesterday after the news went through. And Maggie's just delightful anyway, so I just like talking with her. And now she joins me here on The Score. Hey, Maggie.
Hi, Lawrence. How are you?
I'm doing really well. How about yourself?
Doing okay. I got a dog on my arm and the laundry is done, so I'm good.
Is that Sully on your arm? Is that what's going on?
Yep, Sully decided to just take over my arm, so I've only got one working arm at the moment.
Does Pete know that I'm mad that he didn't come over for the Super Bowl? I mean, for the playoff games?
I don't know, but I'll remind him.
Okay, good. Let him know that I'm mad about that. All right, so I would love, before we talk about Jabari, I would love to know what you thought about what you heard from John Paxson today.
I feel like he gets so focused on the dumbest things and the littlest things instead of seeing the big picture, which is what he's supposed to do, about the way the franchise is headed. Like, who cares if it was a boycott or a mutiny or whatever when Jim Boylan decided to call a practice at a stupid time and players didn't want to come? It was a problem, man. Who cares what you call it? And it's just all little things like that that just really aggravate me and make me have no faith that this team is ever going to turn around as long as he's in charge.
Yeah, I think that a lot of people kind of fall into that boat. So you were there yesterday?
Yeah, I was working for AP, the Associated Press, last night. And I before the game started, I was sitting and enjoying some ice cream with our friend Tony Gill.
Did Tony pay? Because he doesn't pay a lot.
it was part of the dinner that was at that, you know, that they were offering.
Yeah, and that's why I asked, did Tony pay? Because he went through the United Center press dinners and didn't pay for a couple times. And I was like, take a $20 bill and give it to those people for the meals that you've just been stealing.
You know, I didn't see him pay, but I'm not going to say he didn't because I didn't see.
He didn't pay.
So then Tony looks down at his phone and just says, they traded Jabari. And they traded Jabari and Bobby. I'm like, what? So I check in with my AP writer, and he just says, go stand in the hallway and see what you can get. And Bobby came through first. And Bobby, it broke my heart a little bit because first I saw him, I was standing outside the doors, and he was standing in the first part of the locker room, and I see him when they open the doors of the locker room in his full Bulls uniform saying goodbye to people. And then, like, 10 minutes later, I see him walking down the hallway in street clothes with just his backpack. And he's holding his Bulls jersey. And I was out there with Cheryl Racedout from WBEZ, and we tried to stop him to get him to talk. And he didn't want to talk, and he just put his hood up and put his headphones in. And he just was clearly shaken and upset about the whole thing. And it was really sad.
Yeah, that's too bad. I mean, I get it. I mean, you get drafted by an organization. They clearly pick your side in the whole thing with Nikola, and you mm-hmm. think that you're going to be a part of rebuilding it. So I'm sure it probably hurt for him to get traded. It's not like got traded to a great situation either.
Right. And it was interesting to hear the players talk about him after the game. They weren't technically really supposed to be talking about the trade, but Zach Levine did, with no question. He said it sucked, you know, to see somebody like that go. It's the business, but it still sucks. But every single player, Markkanen and Dunn and Robin Lopez and Zach Levine, all talked about how he was the glue of the team, the leader, the captain, the voice. So it shook them up, too. It wasn't just Bobby who was shook up.
So when you finally had the opportunity to talk with Jabari, what was that interaction like?
The polar opposite. Jabari came out of the locker room and honestly looked happier than I have remembered seeing him here in Chicago.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, he just looked relieved, honestly. And so he's come down the hallway, and I was the only one out there at the time. And so I stopped him and said, do you want to comment on anything? He said, yeah, you know what? Why not? So I said, okay. So then, you know, I asked him what he thought of his time in Chicago, what he thought of the trade. And he said, you know, he wanted to do well in Chicago, and it just never quite worked out. But that he was really excited about the situation he was going to. And then I asked him if he was headed straight to the airport. And he said, no, I'm going to Herald. Which,
good choice.
Yeah, I mean, I respect that. And so, and it's funny, when I tweeted that out, like, the number one question people were asking me,
which Herald?
Could you not ask? Yeah, that was what everybody wanted to know.
Yeah, you have to identify which Herald you're down with, because, and I know there were two lists. There's one list that was terrible, ranking the Heralds, and there was another. I forgot who wrote it, but it was a much better list. So, yeah, you have to kind of declare which Herald you're going to.
Yeah, it's important. But he then started answering other questions, so I didn't get a chance to ask which number Harold. So I fell down on the job as a journalist, and I apologize. But it was really interesting to see the contrast in the two men's demeanor, because they were it couldn't be more different. And then the funny thing is I thought the trade story I was going to have to help with would be Anthony Davis.
Right.
And so Jabari and Anthony Davis obviously have known each other for a while. They saw each other in the hallway and gave each other big hugs, and Anthony congratulated Jabari and, you know, told him good luck. And it was an absolutely surreal scene, because all of this was going on while player introductions were happening.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's got to be difficult for anyone except for Jabari, who there seems to have been a lot of relief. And I'm sure that now he gets an opportunity to be a little bit more anonymous, the level of expectation on him is not going to be as high as it would be here.
Exactly. I mean, and honestly, like, the Jabari experiment really makes me think that Chicago needs to stop thinking so much about, oh, well, he's from here, so we should want him to play here. Just get the best guy for the job. He didn't need to play in the public league. He doesn't need to be from Chicago. I think there are some guys that it's better for them to leave Chicago and find a better home for them. And I'm hoping that happens for Jabari. You know, I think his time in Chicago was not well thought out. And I don't think the Bulls used him or even had a plan to use him when they brought him in. But I think that he still could have a pretty great career in front of him.
You're an old football writer, Maggie. Are you going to watch this American Alliance of Football thing?
No. I am a football person, but I watch the NFL. I barely even watch college football, because I'm just not a big fan of amateur football. If I watch football, I want it to be at the absolute highest level. Because when it's not good, football is really not good.
Football, I agree,
can be really boring when it's not good.
It can be terrible.
Yeah. I mean, look at the Super Bowl somehow. So, yeah, no, I'm not into any sort of, you know, second-tier football.
Okay, well, I was just wondering if maybe it might catch your interest and anything else. So thank you for jumping on the show. It's appreciated. We don't do it enough.
We don't. This is fun.
Wait, do you want to play a game of Maggie's voice sounds like?
Oh, God. What does my voice sound like now?
Okay.
Harold's Chicken Shack?
Well, I mean, okay. All right. I can work with that. Maggie's voice sounds like the Harold's in Wicker Park. Now you have to do one.
Okay, but then that makes me sound like, even though I am a Northsider, that makes me sound like the whitest of the Chicago girls.
All right, okay. All right. How about this
which
one?
Which I realize I am, but
Maggie's voice sounds like a pothole at Dearborn in Congress.
Ooh, all right. I'll take that.
But now you have to do one.
About my own voice?
Yes. All right, wait, I'll do another one then. I'll let you think about it. I'll do another one.
Okay, you do another one.
Maggie's voice sounds like the Jewels.
All right. I'm down with this. Maggie's voice sounds like the thingy from the Nuns at the Taste of Melrose Park.
Okay, that's pretty good. Okay, Maggie's voice sounds like rush hour traffic on the Ryan.
But that's a terrible thing. I at least came up with food.
Well, I'm saying, like, it's so Chicago that it sounds like rush hour traffic on the Ryan.
Well, then I think that means I should start having a radio show during traffic. During rush hour traffic, don't you think?
You doing traffic would be outstanding. Because you'd be like, get your ass where you're going and stop being a jerk on the roads.
Yeah, I probably would. This is probably why I could never be hired for that particular job. So I'd be like, if everybody would stop looking at the stupid, there's an accident there. Keep driving. Who cares? Go. So maybe I shouldn't have that job because I would yell and probably bring in some sort of fine.
Maggie's voice sounds like the Kimball stop on the Brown Line.
You know what my very favorite thing on the CTA is? When they do the announcement where they say about if you need service, just check out the kiosk.
The kiosk.
So, it's the most Chicago thing in the world. I love it.
Well, not more Chicago than your voice. So,
thank you.
That's why I love you. At one half of the dynamic duo that is Julie DeCaro and Maggie Hendricks. She's out there covering sports for you. Damn it.
I try.
You are the best. Tell Pete that I'm Matt. And now rub Sully's belly. He needs it.
Okay. I will do that right at this very moment.
I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks, friend.
That's my friend Maggie Hendricks. She's great. Oh, I forgot to tell Maggie. I got a Commander Riker gif that I need to send her. It'll all be revealed. Our buddy Joe Kilgallen is in town. I mean, he's always in town because he lives here and he's from here. I'm sure he's got thoughts on the Bulls as he comes in here with his Bears shirt. We're going to talk with Joe next because he's getting ready to tape a special and you should go check him out because he's a good dude and thorough. We'll do that next here on The Score. So, okay. Joe Kilgallen is here in the studio and we are talking about Maggie Hendricks's voice. So I have this bit that I do with Maggie because I think Maggie sounds the most like the city of Chicago out of any person that I know. So we played a game. Maggie's voice sounds like.
Oh, cool. That's okay? What I saw.
So and actually someone sent in a text that's fantastic. Maggie's 708 text says Maggie's voice sounds like walking up to the Wiener Circle at 2:15. Like that's pretty spot on with her voice. Like I said, it sounds like the Jules.
Yeah, the Jules is another good one.
That's what it sounds like. So we play that game. Like sometimes I'll just text Maggie and just be like, yo, your voice sounds like blank. Yeah. And she's so nice. Like she plays along and she knows she's got a great voice, which is why I'm glad she's actually doing radio. So it's fun. I also think you have a great voice and you're here hanging out with me. That is Joe Kilgallen.
Thank you for having me. Good to be back, Lawrence.
Host of Kilgallen's Pub, the podcast. It is awesome. I hear when comedians come on and yell at you about stuff that you say and you get to do your own thing. You're recording a special?
I'm recording an album. We're filming it too. I'll definitely release it as an album, whether I release it to video. That stuff's still kind of in the works. There's some talks, but nothing really cement in stone on that. But I'm recording it. Timothy O'Toole's here in downtown Chicago Saturday night, 7 and 9:30 shows. 9:30 is about sold out, but the 7 p.m.'s got Pat Tomasul from MGN opening, and Marty DeRose is hosting, so it's going to be a stacked show in front of me. Don't even come for me. Come for them. They're great.
Yeah,
I'm all right.
Pat's really funny, and I've seen him. I tell you, one of the funniest things that he ever did, Jennifer Lyons, who is the news director at Channel 9, left, and they had this going away party. And a lot of people were like, if she's going to come back, and then she did, like 2 weeks later. But he basically did a 10-minute set. Like, everyone was kind of giving these sad, like, oh, Jen, we're going to miss you, and blah, 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 blah. And Tomasulo just turned into Tomasulo, took the microphone, and had us all dying laughing. So that guy is the goods, and he is super funny. So that's a great opening act for you.
I'm excited. I have Chelsea Hood, too. I should have mentioned her and Ed Towns. They're great Chicago comedians. Pat's funny because he's kind of merged his New Jersey personality with Chicago. He's been here for so long now, too. And yeah, he busts chops. He's a ball buster. It's great.
It's good. If you're like, well, wait, do I know Joe from anything? Okay, so remember the commercial that the Cubs were running where it's Ira and you.
Ike Barinholtz.
Ike, that's Ira. There you go. Ike Barinholtz and you. And he's talking to you while you're at the stall, which is one of my biggest pet peeves.
At the trough, the famous Wrigleyville trough.
Yeah. So,
in which you pee in a gigantic sink, essentially.
So the guy saying, stop talking to me because we're at the trough, that's Joe.
That's me.
So that's him in the commercial. And you're like, oh, now I know that guy. But he's been a friend of this show for a while. Him and Herbie go back a ways. I saw you do the admirable job of trying to step in for Dave Hellum at his show at North Bar.
That was rough because Dave wasn't there, and Dave's such a big draw there. Everyone loves Dave. I remember waiting to go on. It was like bad weather, I think, and it was just the crowd wasn't as full. You were there, which I'm thankful for, and maybe like 12 other people. And I remember some people were walking in and they heard Dave wasn't there and they got up and laughed. And I wanted to be like, I'm good too.
Yeah.
But yeah. You know, hosting's a thankless job and Dave does a great job.
Well, I would love to know more about that because I'm also a big fan of Mark Maron's podcast and I hear him talking comedy quite a bit. And I was sitting there thinking, because I was thinking to myself, I would love to host that. Like the next time that Dave's out, because I know I'm not funny, but I know that I could introduce people.
Of course. Yeah. I saw you fill in on the Jam a couple days ago and you've got a natural. I think the key to being a good host is the energy. You have to have a lot of energy. And if you're not going to be funny, then be energetic and have like a little bit of a likability. You have to have a natural likability, which you have.
Well, thank you. I wasn't asking for that. I was just curious though, for you as a comedian, do you feel like when you host an event, can you still get the same joy out of doing comedy when you know that you're doing it in 4-minute spurts instead of a 10 or 15 minute set?
I mean, yes and no, because you have to approach your material differently. Now, I can't do jokes that I would normally do at minute number 30 of a headlining set when I'm hosting, because those jokes rely on building up a rapport with the audience. So if I've got some edgier stuff, some harder hitting stuff, I can't do that 3 minutes in or even in little bursts because the audience is still like, oh, I thought you were just the hype man and now you're going a little dark. And so that, but as a host, you could take nothing and turn it into something because essentially you're going up there. There's no one warming them up for you. You know, maybe you have some good music intro or whatever, but you got to go up there, get the energy going. So you can still enjoy it in that regard, but it's a different kind of high. Let's put it that way. It's wine drunk versus beer drunk. Oh. Hard liquor. You know what I mean?
Okay, yeah.
You still get there, but I have more fun drinking the hard stuff that's going up later. When you're hosting, you're kind of just, you know, it's appetizers and wine, I guess.
When someone asks,
I'm saying that. I don't even drink wine. I don't know what I'm talking about, the wine
beer
analogy, but you get what I'm saying.
Are you honored when someone, like, because
yes, definitely.
I was so happy that it was you. Like, I was so excited that it was you, but I also understood, like, oh, this might not be Joe's crowd, but he's still going to try.
Yes, I was very honored because Dave's a great guy, and I know that's his baby. That's when you're a producer of a show, it's your baby. So when you have someone else filling in, it's almost like you saying, I bless it thee, right? But what made it difficult for that night was just I was walking in because that show 99% of the time is just packed, right? You've been there when you can't even move. That night it was not. So it's a different atmosphere because it's right away people are like, wait, you're not Dave Hellum. And then it's also like, well, why aren't there more people here? Is this not cool? I thought this was a cool thing. So you kind of have to go up against that. So maybe I got in my own head a little bit about it because I don't think I did that great a job tonight. This is a terrible way to sell tickets for my album coming up, but I'm just being honest. But yeah, it's a great honor when someone asks you to do that and you do have to approach it differently.
Joe Kilgallen will be at Timothy O'Toole's recording the album Saturday night, 7 p.m. to 9:30. Pat Tomasulo is going to open up for him. You should go see him. Joe is a really funny dude and a great comedian. The bottom of the hour is being brought to you by Chicago Wolves. Chicago Wolves, fun fact. This season, 48 players have appeared on NHL rosters at one time, and they've played for the Wolves. Interested in the game? Try Wolves Fan 4-Pack. Tickets, Vienna beef hot dogs, drinks, and popcorn at one low price. Visit ChicagoWolves.com. What's the worst you've bombed?
Okay, I did a show in Lima, Ohio, which I'd never been to before. It was like a big private event, and a great friend of mine, Megan Gailey, who's kind of blowing up nationally right now, she's at Comedy Central Half Hour, she got booked for it because some guy started one of the clubs here and got to bring her own couple openers. A lot of these private gigs pay really well, so I heard the pay. I'm like, yes. Also, I think she asked me because I drove a minivan at the time, a little more comfort. And so I get there not knowing that it was for 800 women. It was all women, which is like fine, but you don't realize how much comedy you need both genders in the audience to relate some of the material off of it, right? Because if I do a joke where I make fun of guys, all the women are like, yeah, and they're clapping, but they're not really laughing for the right reason. And I can't make any jokes where it even hint about making fun of women. So I got buried. I was real stupid. My first 10 minutes, I did really well. Then I got too confident. I thought, you know, I got a little too cocky. I was that guy like in the gym that's like, I'm going to start bombing it from the volleyball lines here in this gym. I feel that good behind the arc.
Heat check.
Yeah. And then I did some joke about sex and right away, you just felt everyone just hate me instantly. It was a pretty graphic joke, actually. And then all my friends, and both, I remember seeing Megan Gailey and this other comic, Jeannie Dugan, who's like the most Southside woman you'll ever meet. And they were both in the back just looking at me like, what the heck? What are you doing? Like, and then when I came off stage, they were like, you should have done this joke. They were giving me like all of my jokes that I should have done instead. I was like, look, I know what happened. But I walked like, that was the first time people ever got up and left. I
think
like,
no.
They were like 75-year-old women. And it was rough. I know, because you don't want that. That's like their big night out. And I thought maybe I could just do a little something. And no, it's bad news. They don't want to hear about guys who look like Bobby Flay getting it on. You know, they didn't want to hear that. By the way, that joke works better when you see me in person. I got my hair cut recently, so I got more of that redhead Andy Dalton thing going. But yeah, no, it wasn't.
You got a young David Caruso thing happening right now.
Right now, yeah, because I just got the cut. I went extra tight on the sides.
It's a good thing, though.
Thank you.
Okay, so let me flip that, because people always ask about the bomb. What's the time you killed, like, the most? Like, you walked off stage and you're like, man, I am Dave Chappelle.
Ooh.
I am Chris Rock tonight. I'm Carlin tonight.
I had a show in St. Louis last spring that I got, hopefully my wife's not listening right now, I got propositioned by a couple couples where I'm like, oh, I think they want to take me home and do bad things. Well, if I were single, maybe good things if I were into that.
Sure.
Yeah, it was definitely some stuff like that. I remember one time, the first time I ever really, really crushed was at a club in downtown Chicago, the Comedy Bar. And I remember like the wave, it was like a crazy wave of laughter. Like the laughter went all the way back to hit the walls. And I was trying to start the next joke, but they kept going to the point where it was like a second applause break back to back. And it was a joke I don't even tell anymore about having a dance off at a wedding and accidentally kicking a kid in the face trying to do a Michael Jackson move. Which, by the way, back up, kid. You know what I mean?
Have some respect. Get out the way. You're not supposed to be on this dance floor.
No, it's not. I hate that. Don't you hate it when little kids try to steal the limelight?
I do.
You're 9. Move. Get out. You know.
This is my moment.
Exactly. I think he deserved it.
I'm buzz dancing right now, and you're in my way.
Yeah, exactly. I was making it, you know, I was making it real sexy right there. I chest bumped the bride because she was even into it. And I remember I had to like say thank you. I had to like, because they were going so nuts. I was about to start the next joke and I go, thank you. Thank you. I had to thank them twice. It felt pretty cool. That was definitely the best. That's on the highlight reel.
Oh, okay.
Right. Don't you have like a moment where you're going to look back in your life going, that's going to be in there.
Yeah. There's definitely some moments that I've had here where I've been like, when I leave it, this show, it's usually the replay is happening like immediately in my mind. Like, oh, you screwed that up. You screwed that up. You didn't do this. You didn't break when Herbie told you. You didn't, like, all that stuff goes through my mind. There are some shows where I've walked out here and like, we nailed it tonight. Like, we crushed it, and I feel good, like, until the next morning when I have to prepare the next show.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
That's what, when you do something every day, you kind of have to have the closer's mentality, right? Especially as a comedian, you bomb the next night, you have to go, all right, I got to get back out there. I got to forget about blowing that lead last night. I got to focus. And luckily, the bombs aren't there that much anymore, because once you do comedy long enough, you could call an audible. Oh, this isn't working. All right, I'm gonna go over here a little bit. Let's talk to this couple and see what they're up to, and then I'll segue. You know, it's what's beautiful about it.
Joe Kilgallen will be at Timothy O'Toole's Saturday night recording an album. Please go support Chicago comedy. This guy has been busting his ass for a really long time to make you laugh. Go be on his record. Are you going to actually print like a wax?
I think, you know, I printed CDs last time, and to be honest with you, I'm gone. Most of them are gone. It was kind of a mistake. I might print vinyl. Who knows?
Yes.
That'd be kind of cool.
I think that would be a great idea. 7 and 9:30 shows. 9:30 show pretty much sold out. 7 p.m. show is good to go. Pat Tomasulo is going to open up for him. You, sir, brought a great gift. Don Russ baseball cards. I know you're a huge baseball fan. You talk about the Cubs on your podcast, Kilgallen's Pub. I wanted to wait until we were on the air to open these up.
I think that's cool. Let's reveal. These are from 1989, everyone. The old Don Russ that had like the MVP cards and the Diamond Kings. And these are old. Yeah, the wax is kind of sticking to the back of the card there.
It is. Well, all right, let's see what we got.
Oh, I got to go in right away. Kevin Mitchell, MVP card. Remember big Kevin Mitchell?
Yeah. Good old number 7.
Looks like he'd play mean softball in 16-inch.
I got Mike Blowers. Remember all Mike right. Blowers from the Yankees?
I don't.
All right, that's fine.
Kevin Mitchell had 47 home runs in 89.
Wow. Oh, you might want this one, sir.
What do you got?
Rhino.
Nice. Oh, it's a good one, an all-star card. I got a Ricky Henderson right here.
Okay.
Born in Chicago.
What other good one? Pedro Guerrero card.
That's a good one, too. I got Tom Flash Gordon.
Okay.
Oh, I got a Marquise Grissom.
I'm trying to find the most obscure.
Got a lot of Expos. One. Big Kevin Brown, Mark Langston, Bob Welch, 25 game winner, everybody. Bob
I have a Phillies Tommy Herr card in here.
How about it? I was hoping to get a White Sox for you. I did not get one.
Let me see if I got one. Ooh, Kevin Bass, baby.
Kevin Bass. It's a good one. Astros. Oh,
that's quality right there. Let's see. Candy Maldonado.
One of the great names in sports history, really.
This was my guy growing up. Benigno Santiago.
Of course. He threw guys out from his knees.
Yeah. I was a catcher like most of my life. That was one of my dudes.
30-game hit streak at one point, too.
Damn it.
I got one of the most underrated mustaches of all time. Doug Jones, Indians reliever.
Everyone in here except for Rhino has a mustache. Like, even guys with no mustaches have.
Most of my card is mustaches. Yes, this is true.
Greg Swindell. And then there's a puzzle.
Yeah, I guess I got the puzzle piece too. I got.
Do you know mine is Yaz?
So is mine. We can put ours together.
Is yours Yaz too, Herbie? Baby, we have a Yaz puzzle.
I'll leave this behind.
Oh my God. Yaz. That is top notch.
There's something about this kind of nostalgia that I think people really just owe it to themselves to indulge in from time to time.
Where'd you find these?
On Facebook Marketplace, and then I got another box of 89 Bowman. I would have brought those, but I couldn't find them. It's my wife put them somewhere. I'm blaming her.
In the fire.
I hope not. You got me scared a little bit there. At a garage sale, I got those.
This is so great, man.
I'm all about garage sales, people. You guys got to go there in the summer because you have old people who don't know what they're selling. It sounds like I'm saying to rip them off. But
it is what you're saying.
It is, basically.
But that's okay. I mean, they have whole shows on that, on like Home and Garden and on TLC.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Go rip someone off.
Someone else's trash is another person's treasure.
Correct. I believe that's actually named one of the shows. All right. So thanks for coming in, man. Thanks for being flexible.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
Go check out Joe. He's recording an album at Timothy O'Toole Saturday night. Shows at 7 and 9:30. So Timothy O'Toole's here downtown in Chicago. Have you named it yet?
CommunityShowNow.com is the website for tickets. I'm going to name it Can't Complain because I realize I really can't complain about anything. Like I've caught 3 foul balls in my life.
You got a beautiful little boy.
I got a great son, another one on the way. So,
oh, congratulations.
Yeah, due in May. Thank you.
That is outstanding. Your comedy is going to take a quantum leap, sir. It's going to be fun to watch that happen.
Thank you. Yeah, I'll survive it, I hope.
So go check Joe out. He's a good man, and he's really damn funny and a huge sports fan. So go to Timothy O'Toole Saturday night, 7 and 9:30 shows. Check out his podcast, too. It's called Kilgallen's Pub. I think that you will enjoy it. It's a great way
to drink with people and rant about things.
All sorts of stuff.
All
and then
bar
sometimes
conversation.
People yell at you,
they
which
do.
I think is good, too. And he brought me a puzzle of Carl Yastrzemski, so he is the man. We're going to take a break. We had a baseball conversation yesterday. I want to continue that conversation with a baseball executive next here on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.